Coming to Blu-ray and DVD is Creepshow Season 1. This week's episode is sponsored by RLJE Films. Based on George A. Romero's 1982 horror comedy classic, Season 1 of Shudder's original series Creepshow is coming out on Blu-ray and DVD and is loaded with over 3 hours of bonus content. Pre-order your copy now at walmart.com. Also, RLJE Films is releasing the Shudder-exclusive One Cut of the Dead on Blu-ray Steelbook and DVD. 100% certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. IndieWire calls it the best zombie comedy since Shaun of the Dead. Join in on the madness and pre-order One Cut of the Dead at BestBuy.com today.
Fangoria is honored to publish the legendary master of horror Mick Garris' latest book, These Evil Things We Do, the Mick Garris Collection. Whether a story about a plastic surgeon with a uniquely disturbing approach to his job, to tales of deranged child genius obsessed with his teacher, These Evil Things We Do, the Mick Garris Collection explores mankind's capacity for limitless evil, and how often that evil hides in plain sight. This collection brings together four of Garris' works for the first time in a single volume, along with a brand new novella called Free. Now available for pre-order on Kindle and paperback through Amazon, this week is also your last chance to subscribe to Fangoria in time to receive our summer issue. In case you didn't see online, the cover featuring Patton Oswalt on his dream horror showdown has taken the internet by storm. For very limited time, use the promo code WHOWOULDWIN to get 25% off your first year of Fango at Fangoria.com.
Final Girl Wines is a boutique mom-and-pop wine label any horror lover can be proud to share. Whether it's a big, bold red like their Barbara Petite Verdot, or the crisp summer flavors of their Wichita Rose, there's a Final Girl for your palate and occasion. Their wines have scored over 90 points and above in Wine Enthusiast magazine, and have prices that won't break the bank. Use the code SHOCKWAVES10 to get 10% off your first four-bottle purchase, or sign up for their no-commitment four-bottle wine club to get 10% off all future purchases. Go to FinalGirlWines.com to place an order. That's FinalGirlWines.com.
Fright Rags is bringing you the best in horror apparel and accessories since 2003, offering a wide range of products for your favorite creature features, slasher flicks, and cult classics. They're coming to get you, Barbara. This week, Fright Rags has released a brand new collection for the George Romero classic, Night of the Living Dead, featuring all new shirts, hats, and wax pack trading cards, all officially licensed and available at FrightRags.com. Get them while they last. Shockwaves listeners get 10% off when you use the code SHOCKWAVES2020. Remember, that's Fright-Rags.com.
We are here at Chattanooga remotely. I'm Rob Galuzzo, Rob G. Everyone want to introduce themselves? I don't know what order you're in.
I'm Rebecca McKendry.
There you go.
I miss Chattanooga. I want to come back. It was a blast every time we've been.
I'm Turk.
I'm Elric Kane.
Oh, that was pretty good. That's a pretty good accent. I like it.
We're going to confuse people.
I'll work on my eyebrow raise.
Yes.
You
know,
Turk's never actually been able to join us in Chattanooga for like 2-3 years running now. So, Rye, we got to get you there some year. This year, it took a pandemic to stop us, but we're going to get you there next year.
Yes, absolutely. I'm happy to be part of this time. And, I'm glad we're doing a show on a Saturday night. This is fun.
Yeah.
We have a special topic this time, don't we? Gang?
We do. Yeah. This one was actually really fun. And y'all are going to tell me how crazy I am, which I love. So,
well,
yeah.
Before we jump into it, let's just raise a quick toast to Chris Dorch and team.
Chris Jr. Thank
amazing
you guys so much.
Pivot. That's a hell of a pivot, guys. So well done.
Yeah.
I signed up this morning and I watched The Beach House, which was kind of went in a crazy Lovecraftian way. It was like a couple going to a beach house, very slow burn for a while, and then suddenly a lot happens. I think, Becca, you might dig some.
I've had a lot of people have tweeted at me about this one today saying that I will absolutely love it. So I'm super excited to check it out.
Skull.
That looks badass.
I want to look Skull. I want to see Skull, and I want to see Fulci for fake.
Yeah, you got.
That's great.
See that.
I've seen that before, and that's excellent. Yeah,
all right.
That looks really cool.
And Rob, didn't you do a panel already?
Yeah, yesterday I was part of the Sonic Cinema panel, talking a little bit about Analog Love, which was supposed to be at Chattanooga, and unfortunately we couldn't partake in it. My other feature, Lucky, was supposed to be in Chattanooga as well, which makes me sad. But you know, we're hoping to physically all be together next year. But it went great. We had Mark Covino, the director of the band called Death, was on my panel, which I thought was I loved that film that introduced me to that band. The director of Starfish,
that's an interesting film.
And he was great too. We had a really good time. We were just talking about music and trading stories about mixtapes and what it all means to us. And
I actually thought of you when I watched Starfish because it has a lot with the mixtape. The mixtape's a big part of that narrative, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd never spoken or met Al, the director, but he was terrific. I really enjoyed those guys. So hopefully we can all get together next year in person.
Yeah. Well, also, if you guys are looking for stuff to check out, my short film, Separation, which was produced by Dave Lawson, Rustic Films, who have a pretty big footprint on the festival this year. They produced it. Justin Benson from Resolution and Spring and The Endless stars in it. And it's super goopy and gory in a super kind of gross Cronenbergian way. So check it out. It's streaming at Chattanooga now.
It's definitely my favorite of your stuff so far. I really like this one. This is a very, very much an Elric type of movie too.
It is. It is an Elric
it's
movie.
It's all depressing and fucked up. I love it.
It originally started as like a sizzle and then it just kept on growing and growing. And then, good. Yeah, it kind of became a short film. So yeah.
And also, yeah, quick plug for Scripts Gone Wild, which I know they have a big show coming up this weekend, but we all just did Child's Play. That's why no one but me is still drinking, because every time the word Chucky was uttered, we all
or bitch.
But Chucky was brutal. It was every few letters. Yeah. And Julie Benz, who was really great in it, she did a great job, but she had given up drinking before the new year. And she was forced to drink a lot.
Yeah, and progressively got a little tipsy as we went.
It was really cute.
It was really cute.
It was good.
Elric texts me afterwards, and he's like, "You were great as the gravelly voiced, annoying best friend."
It was even in the description.
Like that.
He even said in the description, it described
Thanks,
you,
dude.
But Elric, I think out of that we learned that you and I make good cop buddies.
We are cop buddies. Yeah,
really good cop buddies. But I do have to say, I was fascinated how different the Child's Play script is from the movie.
The ending is just so different. You know, it's such the movie is so tight.
Well, there's it's a through line, great, the whole thing with Andy's dad. So
the dad in
the original script, that was kind of, and I made a joke last night that it was like Pixar's Child's Play, because Pixar relies so heavily on dead parents in their movies.
Yeah. Oh, so does Disney.
Yeah.
Everyone has a dead mom.
Or even Blumhouse movies. But we rely on dead parents a lot. But there was a whole through line where Andy is recently grieving the death of his dad, who died in a car accident. And then we learn that Andy was part of that accident and tried to drag his dead dad's corpse out of the fiery crash. And you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow. There are so many allusions to it.
It was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. The whole thing, it was basically, dead dad. And there's a scary doll who was promising to take Andy to see dead dad. Was kind of why Andy was suddenly willing to do these things for Chucky, is Chucky was like promising him to send him to see his dad.
To heaven.
And
instead of good guy dolls, they kept having problems because it sounds PlayPal, sounds so much like PayPal. Yes. And it's causing problems throughout the script. And it's a 120-page script and an 87-minute movie. So you see how tight that film is comparatively. Wow. And you're dealing with a doll, you see why you'd probably make that choice. But
it's pretty wild.
We are not off topic, though. That's the beautiful thing. We are perfectly on topic, because Child's Play is a much respected and a franchise that goes in kind of a very different direction at a certain point. But we are here to talk about franchise horror. That's the idea, right?
Yeah. Franchise horror, with the rule of, we're not going to discuss
Nightmare,
Friday the 13th, Halloween, and Nightmare.
Right.
Yeah. In terms of, because we're supposed to come to the table is talk about our favorite franchises that are not Halloween, Friday the 13th, or Nightmare on Elm Street.
And we created a few prompts before. Just so people listening or watching, you guys will get a chance to ask anything you want. Probably, you know, in about 50 minutes or so, we'll open it up and they'll feed us some questions and we'll see if we can partake in that. But I would start this, even though we're not going to talk about Halloween, I would just ask, Ryan is the only one who's trying to, not for any spoilers, but you're having to come up with working on a something that is going to become a new franchise, a new story. How tricky is it to work on continuity of story? Obviously, you're not the writer, but just managing all of that, because I mean, also, you know, there's been Paranormal Activities, obviously, through Blumhouse, Purge.
Which I'm also working on, yeah.
Yeah, so I was just curious if you had anything you could share about running that, because some of these obviously go in crazy directions, don't have any continuity. You know, sometimes it's just every film is a one-off, and sometimes they go off in bonkers directions, which we'll get to. But I was curious if you had anything up top to say.
Well, initially when Halloween came our way, it was a question of, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? And the idea of Rob, you know, continuing what Rob Zombie had created was completely thrown out the window. And when Danny and David initially came in, they were talking about picking up where Halloween 2 left off. But somewhere along their creative process, it was a decision that they had made, unbeknownst to us, until we got that kind of first treatment in. They had thrown out the entire franchise and just said, it's a lot cleaner if we just start with the first one. And it was interesting. I, you know, like in early drafts, I mean, I could talk about it now since the movie came out, like early drafts, Lori had a daughter named Jamie, and she was all grown up, and it was Jamie who was the kind of train wreck, alcohol dependent, drug abuser that Lori had to pull out of that kind of state in order to face the Michael Myers threat that was coming in. But then that character, Jamie, kind of got thrown away. And Karen, Judy Greer's character, came in. But it just made it cleaner just to like start from the first film.
You know? Did they have any clue when they first pitched it of what successive stories could have been without going into what they are? Like, or was that kind of decided after the first?
You mean for like Halloween Kills and Ends?
Yeah, like how?
Like week two of Principal Photography, David's like, I got an idea for the sequel. It's going to be this. And it was pretty wild. It was pretty out there. And I was like, okay, that sounds pretty cool, but let's get through this movie first, please. But let's keep explorations ongoing. And then when we finally got around to going, okay, we're actually going to make a sequel, that was like a month or two after Halloween had come out, David kind of dialed in. And there's some thematic threads between what he initially was talking about, those like early days in Halloween to Halloween Kills. Very lightly though. I mean, like Halloween Kills has become something completely different. So.
But the rare thing, and this is what we're about to get into, is that it's got the same creative team at the top, same director, same writers, and that almost never happens, as we'll see in most of the ones we're going to discuss today.
Well, that's the interesting thing, too. I mean, like, you know, when we talk about the Purge movies, you know, James DeMonaco is the through line through all of them. He writes all of them. But then we started bringing in other directors. And I bring up, like, Phantasm as a comp in terms of a franchise that was overseen by its creator, Don Coscarelli, throughout until the very end. But yeah, it's interesting. But we should kick off.
Yeah, let's get into it. All right. So first thing I was going to put to you guys, I was curious, best successive run of films in a row. What do you think the best streak in one of these franchises is for you guys? And that it has to be more than two. Let's say at least three films. What do you think?
And let me understand the rules. We can't pick the top three for any of the following.
I don't think so.
It can't be.
Okay. I thought we were supposed to pick our favorite franchise, and that couldn't be the top three. And then these were subsequent questions.
You can always talk about some of these questions. Yeah. But
Elric, sure, I looked at your questions. If your questions were this, a physical thing, I looked at them and I went like that. Uh-huh. I was like, I'm going to wing this.
Because Rob is the wild card tonight. I can talk
franchises like there's no tomorrow.
Every time, I ever want to control our shows or when we do live shows, I'm always I want more stuff planned.
I know. You always want to go into the live shows with an agenda. Like our regular shows, you don't even have notes.
Nope. I like that.
No one sticks to the homework. Script.
But anyway, let's do it. These are good prompts to keep us going. So best successive run. I mean, I can think with Rob. Let's start with Rob because I can think of a pretty obvious one with you, but I'm curious if you're going to go there.
Oh yeah.
Well, there's one of two ways I can go. I can go obviously with my personal favorite franchise, which is Psycho. Mm-hmm. Only because consistently it's four movies. You've got the main character who originated the character, Anthony Perkins, in all four movies, and it's basically a complete character arc, and they're all consistently good. There's not one that you're like, oh wow, they went a little too far left with that or right with those ideas. They're all pretty much Psycho movies. You don't really deviate from that. So yeah, I stand by that franchise. I mean, again, for obvious reasons, but I think the quality of them is pretty top notch. And it's also one of those weird franchises. I don't know if you guys get this, where obviously the original is one of my favorite movies of all time, but I almost change my favorite sequel depending on my mood. Like some days I'm like, you know what? Psycho 3 is by far the best sequel. And then other days I'm like, you know what? Actually 2 is the best one. And then other days I'm like, you know what? Actually I kind of like Henry Thomas and 4. So even my tastes of the franchise change, but I still love them all equally. Mm-hmm. It's top notch and consistent.
Yeah. I love all those films, but I love them in different ways. Like 3 for me is like my sleazy film, which I absolutely love because it's so fucking sleazy, like with nuns hurling themselves off roofs and things like that. But 2 I think is like a really tightly wound slasher. 4 is more of a psychological horror, where we know, you know, he is literally talking about killing while all this stuff is going down, and it's not structured like a slasher. It's structured much more like a psychological thriller. But they all kind of bring something different to the table, and they're all really tight. I don't know how I feel about the reboot. I know we're mixed within the group on that one, but yeah.
I guess we count reboots. Yeah. I mean, I think the respect that they show, because it was Hitchcock, you know, they all are just made with utter respect to the original. And that's probably one of the differences between people just taking it in a different direction. What about you, Becca?
Well, I have 2 that I wrote down. And even though that I am not a personal, some of these films are not my personal faves, I do have to say that the majority of the inclusions in the Conjuring franchise have been really top notch. That like, even if, you know, this one may not particularly be my taste, I can look at every single one of them and say, you know what? They did something good there. Like there's something in all of them that I really appreciate.
So you're talking Conjuring universe, like including the spinoffs.
Yep. I'd say, are we considering that as the franchise?
It's a universe like Marvel's a universe. I would say Captain America's a franchise within it, like Conjuring's a franchise.
Really?
Annabelle's
a franchise.
So you guys are saying they're franchises within the universe.
I would, but I mean, if there was a comeback award for any franchise on Earth, it's Annabelle to me. Like, seriously.
Annabelle 2 was great.
Annabelle 2 and 3 are both so much fun, and Annabelle 1 is, you know, it's got an elevator.
Well, fine. Since there is a questionable overruling on my Conjuring sequels, I'm going with Final Destination, motherfuckers.
Where is the floor? So this is successive run. This one isn't about the best.
Okay.
So where does that run go from? What numbers? Because I'm curious on that. Because there's a flaw in that.
I know that everyone hates the racetrack one. Yeah. I don't mind it. I know that one's dicey for some people, but honestly, I would still watch the racetrack Final Destination. What was that? 4?
4.
4. Yeah, I would still watch Final Destination 4 over a lot of other movies. So,
I think 1, 2, and 5 are a perfect trilogy in that series.
Exactly.
And the reason being is because those three actually pick up the same thread.
Yep.
Whereas 3 and 4 are just like remakes of the first couple. Mm-hmm. There's nothing added to it.
Yeah.
I got to see 3 again. That's one I haven't seen enough, but
it's fun.
Definitely deserves a lot of praise. Others.
Yeah.
In terms of best franchise, it'll probably come up again because it's just, it feels like the people at the top at least had a vision overall at some point, or at least returned to that vision in a really
strong way.
Yeah.
I think Final Destination, I mean, like, it went out on top though. That was the thing that made me very happy. It was like you had to wade through murky waters and a very questionable sequel just to get to one that kind of turned it on its head, brought it back around, and went out on top. That's why I almost like feel like I don't even need another Final Destination movie, although it would be fun to see one in contemporary times, but, or now, But yeah, that one.
Oh, yeah, really, with everyone stuck at home. Yeah. That's brutal, right?
And I do have to say that there is something to be said for those kills more so than a lot of other horror films, because never once am I like eating pizza and then suddenly remember Freddy ate soul pizza or anything like that. But the amount of times that I've been driving behind one of those log trucks, or even like my daughter takes gymnastics, and every single time I see one of the girls flip off those parallel bars, it's there. And there's a reason that I'm
or LASIK.
I know there's LASIK. A reason that I'm still like, I want LASIK. I'm like daring myself to get it. So yeah,
you lose your eyeball.
Those kills are just top notch, like psychologically damaging.
Well, here's my question. Here's my question I'm going to pitch to the group. I mean, obviously with the Psycho movies, Rob, there's a high revisit value to them. Final Destination. Yeah. Can you turn to those time and time again? I mean, like for me, I recently did a Final Destination binge watch, but that was after like maybe a giant span of time between me seeing it in the theater and then me revisiting them on DVD Blu-ray. Like I didn't feel the urge to go, okay, I want to throw on Final Destination 2 this time, just for shits and giggles. Like there was just a itch I wanted to scratch just to see them all and binge watch them. Now I'm good. I'm like, I can, I could put some time behind me and then revisit them again, maybe like a few years down the road.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's the Psycho franchise to me is a comfort franchise. Mm-hmm. I can go to any one of them at any point and feel comfort because I love those movies. Final Destination, I haven't seen them in probably since that last one came out. Yeah. So I'm due for a revisit. I can watch it right now, but you're right. It's not the sort of franchise I would go back to and watch over and over and over again. Right. But there's been enough time that I kind of want to just go for it. They're literally a roller coaster ride, as mm-hmm. the third one is. Yeah, yeah. Whereas I think some of the other franchises that we love, you know, Halloween, Psycho, whatever, they're comfort. We can, we grew up with them. We can literally put any one of them on and it'll probably take us back to a period in our life where we saw that franchise for the first time or it meant something to us, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Ryan, best run.
Best run, Children of the Corn. And let me tell you why. No, I'm kidding.
I'm lucky I didn't have my drink. My
How
God.
Many are there now? Like 16, 17?
It doesn't have to be all of them, though. It's just the best run.
They're shooting one now in Australia.
Of course they are.
And in case anybody thinks that's an April Fool's joke, we're not kidding. They're actually shooting another Children of the Corn in Australia. I probably want to say Omen.
I revisited all of these just this week.
Yeah, we did the trilogy. I don't dare go through the fourth one, and I don't do the remake.
Ryan, the fourth one has the psychic fair.
No,
I don't know what a psychic fair is. It was like a Comic-Con, but for psychics, it looked fun.
If this was a remake episode, I would challenge you on that, because I thought the remake was actually pretty good. Like, some of the kills were still really scary. You didn't like it? I liked it.
That was a snooze fest, man. Right. No, but in terms of, you know, best successive run, I mean, like, you've got a great trilogy right there. You know, you've got Damien in his youth, Damien as a teenager, and Damien in his adult years. And it's just a great story. It's a great character arc, great mythology.
But there's a lot of great trilogies. Like, if we really break it down, we can get a lot of these to have three.
For sure. But you said success has run more than two.
Yeah. No, you can answer that. I'm just saying. Yeah,
I don't know. When I revisited them last week, I realized that the first two pack this massive punch because Damien has this self-realization of, holy fuck, I'm evil. Like, he has it in the first one. And then in the second one, there's this scene where he learns what he is when he's reading the Book of Revelations. Uh-huh. And he has this like 10-minute running scene. Yeah. And then in the third, like, he begins knowing he's evil. And so it didn't have as much of a punch for me.
But you don't get the political intrigue of Damien wielding the power that he has and sending out emissaries to track down the firstborn baby of all these families to eliminate fucking children. Like, that is his goal. He wants to go out and eliminate your babies in the event it's the second coming of Christ. That is a fucking powerful story. And it just goes to show how messed up Damien was. And Sam Neill is so freaking good. And the soundtrack is so powerful. But yeah, that's in terms of success. Like, I think that, you know, like I could reach for, no, I can't. Omen.
I got to go. This might be somewhat, well, I mean, if we're doing threes, Evil Dead, but 1-3. But for a 4-film run, I went Romero from Night of the Living Dead to Land. Because I think Land's really fun. After that, I lose a lot of interest. I'm not
That's
the found footage one. But that's like a perfect, like, you know, even like the fourth isn't perfect. It's a really entertaining movie, and it does show a bigger vision. And the first three to me are just like, like what you're saying about Psycho. I think I feel a little bit about these because there are times where when I was younger, I didn't like Day as much. And then as I got older, I started to like Day a lot. When I don't know what it was about in my teens. I always found it maybe as too nasty or something.
And Day's my favorite. And really also, I think Day is the template for Walking Dead.
It is.
I think that's the thing they're ripping off the most.
Absolutely.
Completely agree. Equality.
But you know what? I'm glad you gave love to Land because I saw Land in theaters and every couple of years I revisit it and I think it holds up just as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing I wish he did, and I know it's a rights issue, is Big Daddy should have been Bub. If he was Bub, that movie would be a damn masterpiece. Yeah. Like, if Bub was the one that led all the zombies in Land of the Dead, we'd all be like, dude, that movie freaking rules.
Yeah. Because there's something about it. Character. But because he's also black, there's something really powerful about it because it does feel very topical. It feels like it feels like political awareness and the tables being turned. And again, very close to Walking Dead. Very close. Like, where it lands with the little place, like an ivory tower type place, that's all Walking Dead is now. Yeah, and not as good anymore.
Well, just even the scope of Land of the Dead. I love Land of the Dead. Don't get me wrong. I think it's one of those films very much like Day of the Dead. I mean, I was way too young to see Day of the Dead in the theater. But I know, you know, hearing from people who saw Day of the Dead in theater and were like, I thought it was okay. But over the decades, it has... You know, has just gotten better with time. Mm-hmm. Land of the Dead is definitely one of those films too, and I just love the scope of it. You know, the Dead Reckoning, and you know, John Leguizamo gives that movie his all. You know,
he's really good in it.
He's really
and
really
Dennis
good.
Hopper picks his nose.
Yeah, yeah,
he does that. That great scene. Right?
But I remember there's a line in John Leguizamo. You know, it's you know, after he gets bitten, there's just one line that really just hammers it home. And he just sits down and he takes out a cigarette and they're like, you okay? You want me to pop you in the head? He's like, well, I guess it's time to see how the other side lives. And that's a perfect Romero.
Yeah.
Line, you know, it's so good. And Aja.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As a director, even though like I have less interest once he went embrace kind of the found footage type style, but he has absolute integrity as a filmmaker. He's like one of those guys right to the end. He's always trying to, it's always about an idea.
And I do have to say, I was thinking about Diary a couple of days ago, not so much in that it's such a great movie because I want it to be what all the other of the Dead films were, but think about it in terms of what's happening now where this thing is happening outside and everyone is forced to live entirely online. Mm. It seems, you know, it was kind of a little ahead of its time in that capacity.
I might watch it again. I haven't seen it since I first saw it and I didn't, I was just kind of like, tonally. Also, I guess in a way, 28 days later and 28 weeks later, they almost took that baton and ran with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That like idea and story going. And that's another one. Once there's another entry into that, that could be vying for great franchises because they're exciting films. Okay. I'll go to this question because it's very close to that one in case there's anything else. Best story continuity across an entire franchise.
I know this one already. Hands
all right.
Down.
You take it.
I honestly think it's Saw. And because they did not have a plan, they did not have a blueprint. I'm just I see you, Ryan.
Ryan is doing an extreme close up.
I just think it's amazing that I with the exception of maybe one or two entries out of what, seven of them at this point, eight. I can't. I have even lost.
More about
ending. I just can't believe they crank those out once a year from that one little movie. And then every year they always turned it on its head and we walked out of the theater like, whoa, did you believe that twist? So continuity wise, it's like, I think it's a miracle that the Saw franchise exists and that they all even connect the way that they do.
And that's all because of Bousman, because he has the key run that sets up the idea of story.
He definitely does.
Like, just in terms of like what they could be, you know.
Well, by the way, my favorite Bousman quote, because I think 5 is the one that universally gets panned the most. But basically Bousman takes credit because he's like, well, you know, part 4, I ended the movie as I jumped the shark so that I forced part 5 to just land by jumping of the shark.
That's great.
So he's like, I'll take credit. It's fine.
I like that. Becca, what do you think? Continuity-wise,
let's see. Insidious, I did love how everything had this through line, especially when you look at the first one and two, how the second one was literally pulling kind of insignificant moments from the first one that I didn't even really pay attention to, but then turning them into prominent plot points in the second one. I really enjoyed how it did that. I do have to say Jaws.
Yeah, I was thinking Jaws would come up here.
Really consistent with the storyline.
Continuity? Yeah, there's four different crazy shit going on in this.
I know, but I think that was pretty continuous. Like it still.
I mean, they still keep the family.
The family's still involved. It may get kind of bonkers. That's one that will come up later for me, where it's like that you love no matter how fucking they get.
It's so good.
Junkanoo. I will always go to Junkanoo. So yeah, but I will definitely say Jaws. And I also have to give love for Wreck, I think did a really good job of kind of picking itself back up twice and kind of.
Wait, what did that go up to? I don't even know. I mean,
four.
I know one, two,
three, or four.
Three is the wedding, right?
Yeah.
And four the one on the ship?
Four is the one on the boat.
Oh, yeah. That was decent too. Okay.
Yeah. Three was fun. That's another one that I like. I can watch any of those films and appreciate what they're doing. Yeah. And they all still really kind of always kind of circle back to that initial point as well.
I hate doing this on Zoom because I can't just throw faces now when I'm
like, I know. Somebody loves it. Yeah. No. Okay. Well, you can answer. What was your own?
Yeah. Since you looked at me weird for
since you're
saw,
poo-pooing Rob.
Saw, I don't want to have to reach for my Saw handbook to like put all the threads and pieces together who's who and get the glossary of characters and all
that's
this
why
shit.
They're awesome.
Okay. It was a toss up for me. I mean, everybody I think knows where I'm going to lean, but I want to do special runner up to the Alien franchise.
Yeah.
Because the story of Ripley and that her continuity and her journey is pretty remarkable, but Sidney Prescott and Scream, guys. I love the story continuity of Scream 1 through 4. And I love how, now having recently revisited all four films and then charting, if it wasn't for fucking Sidney's mom, man, like there is no Scream. Like Sidney's mom goes on a journey in and of itself, but it's all it's Sidney playing catch up and getting information about her mom throughout these films. And it's how her mom, the blast radius of her mom's decision-making and what had happened to her in her life. None of this would happen without that. So I love how, even though 3, is questionable, I do love that she's got a fucking brother like she didn't know about. Like it's just so soap operatic and fun. And it's hard to get caught up in it because what they did so well was establish great characters you loved. And, they could keep throwing more at Sidney Prescott and it could be family number 5 or a cousin or whatever, because those films rooted you in a terrific emotional space, you cared and you went along for the ride.
And they had to, I think, because after the first one's actually scary, because it was new. We weren't used to them. Once we got used to the killer kind of concept in the costume, you had to just love the characters to care who got picked off,
Yeah.
And that's a good choice.
And you know what? I want to runner up or tie with Saw, whatever. Honestly, Child's Play is the only franchise I know that is 100% not veered from continuity ever.
Yeah.
There was a new one, you're like, all right, Seed's pretty wild. And then you get to the next one, which is what? Curse?
The one and in the Curse, house, the gothic one?
Yeah. And you think, is that Curse? I think it's
Curse cult. And then no, Cult. No, Curse and then Cult. Cult.
Yeah, Cult.
You get to Curse was a very impressive little sequel Curse was debuted on Blu-ray and it came as part of the first box set that collected all the movies. So I remember when my first time seeing Curse is getting the box set on Blu-ray and being able to watch them all in a row. And then all of a sudden it's like, cool, I have a new Child's Play movie to watch. And then you watch it and you're like, all right, I guess this is kind of a reboot. I'm not sure exactly. And then you realize, no, it is absolutely a sequel to Bride, to Seed, to all of them. They all continuity-wise fit. And that makes me excited for the show because I know that the upcoming show, Chucky, will pick up from Cult of Chucky. The continuity still continues now across multimedia platforms. So
yeah, yeah.
That one's really boring for this. I think I would just go Evil Dead 1-3 because I just love the way that story just takes you into such a crazy third film. And yet totally organically, you're going with this trip, the time travel at the end of 2, the character pulls you through, and then to take it into the series as well. And it's just Ash. I mean, I would love to see him appear in a Fetty film as a different kind of version of that character. But I really think those films they hold up so well as a trilogy. Mm-hmm. And they're just so different. Again,
even into the TV show as well. Like that's what I mean. Still, yeah. So represented.
It gets, the tone changes a bit, but
officially, I mean, like in terms of kind of like deep mythology, beginning a story arc, it kind of kicks off with Evil Dead 2.
You're right. One is a remake.
Yeah. It's like where a franchise really began is with the second one.
You're probably right. So I'll go 2-3 in the TV series. And one's just a great standalone. Well, let's go straight into favorite overall. So the quantifier here being you have to be willing to be on the side of the ones that may be questionable to other people. What do you think your favorite overall of an entire franchise? So, like, if this was really there as the Hellraiser, to stop anyone who loves the first three Hellraisers from going fat pinhead.
I think I already answered it. I mean, like, Scream. Mm. I think it's Scream. I mean, I'll go to bat for Scream 3. Mm.
Anybody who made a documentary about a franchise.
So we have two of them out of the way.
Yeah.
Two of you are done. And basically Becca Jaws. All right. No,
no, no, not. I mean, remember I got to write a comic book in this franchise. So Hellraiser.
Overall.
No. I will say some of them are spotty, but even.
No, I know, but you're willing to go. You're willing to fight for Hellraiser Hellworld.
Let's say the kindest thing ever said about Hellraiser, all of them, is that some of them are kind of spotty. Fat Pinhead is more than spotty.
Okay, I'm going to argue that only the first four actually count as the Hellraiser franchise.
It's true.
Because everything post that was a different script formatted to be a Hellraiser movie.
Like, I will actually go to bat for Debtor because I think Debtor is a really tight little script, but it was not in any way intended to be a Hellraiser movie. The Scott Derrickson
one. That's Inferno.
Sorry. It was somebody well known wrote Debtor. It was like a well known screenplay writer. It was one of their first ones. It was sitting
in the guy who did, I think it's the guy who wrote 13 Ghosts.
That's it. Yeah, but they had it was sitting at Weinstein. They dusted it off and said, hey, yo, go put Pinhead in this. The ones that were actually written for Pinhead is 1-4, which I always love. I had a blast playing in that franchise world. It's very bifurcated as to what right goes with what parts. Like some people own Pinhead and then Barker owns some Cenobites, but can't use this specific mythology, but can use this mythology. And then some other mythology goes with.
Okay. Becca, going back to the original question, this is your franchise overall. You're willing to go to bat for that very last Hellraiser.
I will double back. I will say that as a whole, if I am going across the board, if somebody asks me my favorite franchise, I will say Hellraiser. If I am going to bat for all of them, if I am going to bat for every single one, I'm going to say, this is also crazy, Pitch Black. I love, don't make that face turn.
Wait, how many are there? Two?
No, there's four. Three in an anime, but the anime is really good too. So,
are you counting Bloodshot?
Pitch Black.
Ryan brought up a picture of the fake Pinhead.
Becca, you'll go to bat for me.
Not Doug Bradley.
And that is why I am changing I will go to bat for any of them to Pitch Black because we've got Pitch Black. We've got Chronicles of Riddick. We have Riddick. And then we've got the anime. And they're all, I love them.
Riddick is a dope movie. Riddick is a lot of fun.
It's like him doubling down on being just this misogynistic, horrible meathead. But it's just like... Yeah, he makes so many references to his balls when I'm balls deep in somebody. Like, it's just, he's constantly, it's everything that I hate about people, but I love it in a movie when he's fighting badass aliens. Yeah. Pitch Black, I just thought was a great movie. Like, that is one that I will revisit anytime. Chronicles of Riddick, I did not get the love that I felt for it.
Do the others stay horror? I mean, the first one I know has horror elements. Yeah, sure. I never saw any of the others.
They all have creature feature.
Yeah, okay. It's like, all creature features.
Chronicles of Riddick, what are they called? Necronauts or something?
Necros. Yeah. Creature-y. Yeah, they're all undead. That one's kind of more like political. Like, it feels very kind of like Star Wars, where it's like all of these warring factions and he's like stuck between. But yeah, and then by the time it gets back to Riddick, it's just like badass aliens with this misogynistic meathead fighting them who just kicks ass, and I love him no matter what he does. And then the anime it's kind of more, it doubles down on the science fiction elements. There's a lot more space travel to it, which you don't get like in all of those. He lands someplace and then he's there for the movie. The anime goes a little bit more space heavy. So yeah.
He'd make a pretty good pinhead. I could almost see him.
But can you believe, like, I remember when Pitch Black came out and it was a pretty cool movie, like, oh, this is kind of like Aliens-esque or whatever. Mm. But can you believe that that movie was successful enough that they're like, we're going to do an anime sequel and we're going to do the most expensive freaking sequel ever called Chronicles of Riddick that expands the mythology. Yeah. Like, I can't even believe that happened.
Yeah.
But
and big speaking movies of, too.
Since I know we're going to talk bonkers, it's not horror, but Vin Diesel is in the most bonkers franchise in movie history, which is the Fast and Furious series.
Yeah, right.
Makes no sense to me whatsoever that is continuity and people die and come back or whatever.
Well, then there are some like Tokyo Drift.
It's
a great movie, but that's the least connected with the world, and then it comes back a little bit. But yeah, I will watch every single one of those.
Doesn't matter. My fiance is watching them all out of order, and I'm like, doesn't matter. Go ahead. Watch.
You guys probably won't remember, but a couple of years ago, I did what I called Furious Nightmares, where I would watch A Nightmare on Elm Street followed by the Furious franchise, and I went one for one, going back and forth.
I do not remember that.
That would make me so delirious.
I called it the Furious Nightmare. It was probably back at Killer POV. I think I was pregnant at the time.
Wow.
Pregnant. That
totally explains
crazy
Strummer.
Shit. Yeah.
That's him in a nutshell. Those two movies.
The Furious Nightmare.
He loves the cars, right? That's pretty good. I'm curious where Hellraiser will go. I mean, now that we know there's a movie in development, but also a TV series, I'm curious what kind of differences there'll be.
I am too.
And which one will get there first, you know?
There is a lot of weird kind of rights issues of who owns what parts of the original Clive Barker stories versus what Clive owns. And it's a little muddy. And so I know the TV show floated around to a bunch of different development houses before it finally landed where it is now. 'Cause I pitched on it like twice.
I did notes on the pilot that we were developing.
Yeah. So it's been all over the place. And so, yeah, I'm excited to see what they finally did with it. Because both of the places that I was seeing it at, they were going in completely different directions. And so I assume this third one is in a different direction. Yeah. So.
And the exciting part is they're not doing it to keep the rights like it has been done every other iteration lately. So I'm excited.
Trying to get it right. Yeah,
get it right. Return it to what it is.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan.
No, I said Scream.
Oh, you started. You kicked up.
Yeah. I set you up for bonkers franchises.
Hold on. I'll finish my favorites first. Mine was one that Ryan brought up top, which I think is Phantasm. I think the older I get, the more I fall in love with Phantasm 1. It's becoming one of my favorite horror films. And I know what it is now between all of them, even though I don't love every entry completely. I love the way the characters are loved so much, and by the end I love the way they tied it up. Even if I didn't love the last movie, I thought it was good, but it was so lovingly done, and I love the handmade quality. I think I'm more the older I get, same with Evil Dead the first couple, but I just love that I can see these people making these movies, you know. Number two is the only one that feels quite big at times, and I was watching
Oblivion. Which uses the unused footage from one.
Yeah, which is
ever been done in a franchise.
It was freaking exciting. I was just watching it two nights ago when we were talking about this, and the part where he jumps on the back of the ice cream truck and he steals an ice cream, and it was like having a flashback to something you've never seen before. Like, because you've seen all that footage from the original Phantasm. Cool, fun movie. And I just love all the actors in this film. And these are hangout movies, you know?
I want to chime in because I'm sure some listeners jumped in halfway through this conversation. We're talking about franchises and our selections based on Elric's questions. But we are leaving out Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, and Halloween, because I'm sure some newcomers to this podcast are going, what the fuck?
Let's just take five seconds to just say what is your favorite of those, just before we move on. Yours is Halloween?
It's Friday the 13th.
Okay.
No, I've always said Halloween's the better film, but, you know, in terms of consistent sequels, it's not... I can't watch, like, Halloween 5 is not necessarily something I reach to. Halloween 6 is always a curiosity that I need to remind myself, boy, they made some really wild decisions. But Friday the 13th, in terms of franchise, consistently pleases me.
And Becca, I'm gonna guess, is Nightmare.
Nightmare and Jason Lives.
There you go. All good.
Nightmare is my favorite franchise because I grew up a Freddy guy.
Yeah.
But I do agree with Ron. I think Friday the 13th is the most consistent franchise ever.
Yeah.
I come back to those the most myself. Like, to watch they're every Halloween. They're just something about them. They're watchable.
Comfort, fast food. Yeah. You know what you're getting every time.
And but Nightmare is my world too. I'm with you, Rob. It's like Nightmare and Freddy's my world, but it's easier to watch the Friday 13th.
And yet I only love maybe two, maybe three of the Nightmare movies.
Really?
Like, love. I don't love them.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
There's only two that are like, yes, I want to see those over and over.
Which ones do you love? And let's see if it cross reference. Let's see if it's the same ones as mine.
Yeah, it's one and three. And over the years, two is kind of snuck up as just a curious oddity.
I don't like four at all.
I like New Nightmare. I do one, three, and New Nightmare.
I like New Nightmare in concept. I just hate the way Freddy looks in it. I think he looks like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle villain. And I can't, it's not scary to me at all. If they made him
shredded,
look
he's shredded.
Different, he looks like Shredder, sort of.
Yeah, yeah, well, plus he keeps wearing the top hat. Like, he's dressed like Noir Hulk. He's dressed it's got like this like hat and trench coat on. So
it looks
like
the thing when the thing's walking the streets of Manhattan or whatever from Fantastic Four.
All right, but we're not talking about those. They're not part of today's show. But if you
they're
came in,
not
you got
part
your,
of. Yeah, no.
At least
Jason.
You got your fill.
No,
but wait,
no,
I want,
no
you know
funny.
What, really quick, if we're going to talk about those, let really quickly, the if of the top three, if there's only one that you watch, and it could be the original, which one would you recommend? Because with Nightmare, I would actually say if you've never seen a Nightmare movie ever, four is the like kind of definitive best of. Mm. Like, if you've never seen a Nightmare movie before, if you watch Nightmare 4, you're like, okay, I get it. This is what Nightmare on Elm Street is. Characters, Freddy, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
look, I love Dream Warriors, but
that would be the most satisfying meal for someone jumping in.
Yeah.
I mean, one is still my favorite movie. I think one's a classic. Yeah. Halloween 3 for sure. That's the one I most want to watch every year, I'll be honest.
It's true.
All franchises. Halloween 3 is the movie I watch. Tom Atkins gets laid. It's good.
I know. Are you talking about for the franchise that we like? The one that we like?
Yeah, whatever you want. Like, you know.
I mean, I'd probably say like Friday 4.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Nice. If you only watched one and you wanted to get the tone of the whole franchise.
If you wanted to get the tone, because I mean, like, everybody asks what my favorite entry is. Jason Lives is my favorite entry, but that one's got the most comedic element to it.
And like, you have to know. It's very self-referential as well.
Yeah. But you have to have seen another one. Yeah.
Four encapsulates the, you know, the innocence, the camping, the you know, the sex, drugs, and all that fun stuff.
And Joseph Zito does a great job with that film, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
That's what I meant. Not necessarily the best one, the one that captures the tone of the whole franchise. Right, to me, Nightmare 4 gets the whole franchise, whereas 3 is my favorite.
Yeah.
No, 4 definitely kind of doubles down on punny Freddy a little bit more, which I think is, you know, kind of what he's become known for. So, yeah. Yeah.
Let's go bonkers. Our favorite topic of all. Most bonkers. We've spent some time talking about bonkers movies on the show over the years. I remember a couple years ago talking to Joe Bob about weirdest movies, weirdest sequels down in, that was at Chattanooga, I believe.
That was at Chattanooga.
Yeah, a couple years back. So who wants to lead off here? You want to kickstart us? Most bonkers franchise. Let's start with Becca this time and work to Rob.
Okay, I will say I will watch any Puppet Master anytime, and those are always bonkers.
How many of them are there? I think there's 10? Or then the remake?
Way more than that. But those are ones that, like, I don't care. Puppet Master can be in, like, an ice cream shop. I'm going to watch it and be like, hell yes, Leech Woman's in an ice cream shop. It's just, I will always watch
that. That'd be good. Each one could be a flavor. I like that. Leech Woman is a great but, film.
I do have to say, I have some of the subsequent sequels of Amityville. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love, like, especially when it turned into haunted items coming from the house. Like, It's About Time is actually a pretty damn good movie.
We watched that recently. Yeah,
we watched that one the same night because we were texting back and forth.
But think about it. They do this from number two. Is already one of the craziest sequels I've ever seen.
So sleazy.
And that's number two, you know? That has to be like pound for pound one of the strangest entries.
Yeah. It gets into the haunted lamp. The doll maker is actually a good sequel. Yeah, there's some that are actually good. And I also included one that I know is near and dear to all of our hearts, Poltergeist. Poltergeist, the second one kind of goes off the rails for me. Like when Tequila Monster shows up and things like that, but I still absolutely love it. And then three is just it still is off the rails. We've got that weird high rise and mirror reflection.
I think three is like a miracle.
Great movie.
Given what they're up against at times. Yeah. Like there's, in terms of practical effects and stuff, I love that film.
Yeah, it's such a good movie. But Amityville is my
That had to come up for sure. Amityville strikes me as definitely in the conversation. All right, Rob, which one are you going with?
Most bonkers. I mean, it's Basket Case, for Christ's sake.
If
you look at Basket Case 1 and then
But that's
Basket
pretty
Case
good continuity.
wait a minute. How did we get from 1 to 3?
Which is the one where he's trying to separate himself? Or no, rejoin him. Is that 2 or 3?
Well, 3 is... Even Frank Henlotter doesn't like 3. He feels like he was pressured into that. But they're like... I think 2 is one of the craziest sequels to a movie ever.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the ending of 2, which I don't want to spoil, it's my favorite ending to a sequel ever. It has got the best ending to a sequel to any franchise ever. Yeah, 3 goes really off the rails because part 2 introduced, like, obviously in part 1, his little brother, who he's separated from, is in a basket, hence Basket Case. And then in part 2, he goes to a secluded kind of like halfway house where it's all kind of similar deformed creatures and people, and it becomes Freaks. It becomes like a really bizarre version of Freaks. And then 3 just takes that a little notch further, but you know, and I think Frank has even said it was a half-baked idea. Now the thing that I love even more is that on the Arrow Video did a Blu-ray of the first one, and Frank shot a little short film. I can't remember. It's like 10, 15 minutes long. And it's called Basket Case 3.5. And it's like it's a short film, and it's conversation with Dwayne now acting as a sequel. It's the unmade part 4. And so if you include that as well, it's the most bonkers series ever. I love it.
I love that came up though. I thought it might have popped up for best continuity for some reason, but I guess not.
No, it's pretty bonkers.
All right, Ryan. Bonkers. Can you talk?
No, I can't. I mean, Basket Case is pretty bananas. It's the most bonkers. I do want to just give a shout out as a runner up to the Exorcist franchise. Just for the sake of conversation, because that was one where, you know, 2 is pretty out of this world. 3 tries to bring things back down to earth, but isn't able to recapture the kind of same essence of the first Exorcist, but bring something new to the table and perhaps one of the scariest movie moments in history.
Yeah.
And then you've got the dueling Exorcist 4s, Rennie Harlan and Paul Schrader. So it's just it's an interesting historical look at how the Hollywood system kept trying to recapture what Friedkin did back then. And then the output was just completely weird. But in terms of bonkers franchises, Phantasm, you already mentioned Phantasm, and that's one that I love. But each one has its own kind of
flavor.
Its own flavor, its own fingerprint. You know, 2, you clearly see the studio influence. It's a little bit bigger in scope, bigger stunts, cooler, slicker look to it. Oh, shit.
Did we cut out?
Well, I don't know where we cut out, but Phantasm was my... Okay, cool. Okay. I was going to say, like, Phantasm 2 was definitely like the slick look. Phantasm 3, obviously, Don is working with a lesser budget, but, you know,
but it's still, that one's like Phantasm. So 90s. I love that one. Cause it is so historical.
Reggie's getting girls
time. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, like, but you're dealing with it, but like they come upon a survivor kid, you know, who's got like this kind of Home Alone rigged house, you know? Yeah. It's very weird. It's
weird that part. Yeah.
Four is weird because of all the flashbacks and what they were working with. Ravager, you know, as a whole.
I think I agree with you. I mean, I think they're bonkers, but I think their story continuity is pretty good because of the people at the control, you know, in terms of trying to thread a storyline. So I guess when I think of bonkers, I'm and I'm going to burn this card because we talked to Joe Bob about this one, Howling, just utterly bonkers, right? Like when you get to Marsupials and or Sybil Danning, Harry Sybil Danning, you're like, you can't get crazier than that. But my favorite, the one I keep always think about is Silent Night, Deadly Night, man. I think that is what the definition of no story continuity and besides one and two and utterly bonkers. Well, three as well, I guess, you know, it's just, it's such a crazy, and then the people who made them all too, it's such a weird series and I really like rewatching them. Like I do like coming back to these movies around Christmas every year. I mean, cause Yuzna's a shot like broad daylight, sunshine, LA doesn't look at all wintry. Right. I think the last one, Toymaker, really good. Monty Hellman, like they get this like, you know, major kind of, you know, art house director to do part three and he didn't want to do it and somehow had a fever and signed the contract. I mean, it's just a weird, weird ass series. All right, let's do it. The next two can be kind of brief and then we'll answer some questions from people. I wanted to know post 2010, if there was a film that you would love to see become a franchise, saying that is a single entry thus far. Because I that's one thing I kind of miss, to be honest. I know some of the bigger movies spawn sequels, but for the smaller films aren't as much anymore.
I love when a part two just goes crazy and it's like I would have loved to have seen It Follows Two.
That's my
I want to know what that would have been. I wrote just some notes for you. Or just so left field that you're like, why'd they make a sequel to that?
You can go so many directions with that. Cool, because the things that, so I wrote, It Follows Back, Island of It Follows, It Follows Deader, It Follows It's About Time, It Follows One Against Part of.
It hasn't followed in the hood yet.
No, it hasn't gone. It should go to the hood. It
follows in the hood.
But I think like,
It Follows goes to college. I mean, there's a lot there.
The first one's so well directed and that the style of the movie is movie, but I think somebody else, it'd be kind of fun to see what somebody else would do who's a little more pulpy and, you know, a bit more of a, anyway, I would have been, I'm totally with you. That would have been definitely my number one.
Yeah.
To have wanted to see. Any others?
I had a couple. I have the ones that like I want to see more of, but I know they're not commercially viable. Like I always thought Devil, the M. Night Shyamalan one was such a, he produced it. I always thought that it was such a cool concept of the devil just pops up and starts fucking with people in these kind of claustrophobic enclosed environments. And so I loved the way that that was structured. And that one was in an elevator. And I was like, there are so many different possibilities for this. And of course, they're not going to do a reboot of it because the movie fell asleep pretty quickly. But I always thought that that one had a lot of potential. I would love to see more Ouijas.
But there are a couple, right?
Yeah, there's two.
Two.
You want more.
Oh, that second one.
How
I
much
was
more
like,
do you want, Becca?
I want more, Rye. I think there's more Sinisters in stake as well. What the? You can't just.
Sinister definitely. Yeah.
People should have come off for Sinister 2, guys.
I think in Sinister 2 is the best sequel is the Iceland. I want that Iceland 1930s Sinister movie.
What was the crossover you wanted? Was it Insidious versus Sinister? I can't remember.
I can't even remember. I mean,
well, Purge Predator is genius.
Purge Predator, that's genius.
Even better than that, I had a House of the Devil, because I would like to see a sequel. House of the Devil mixed with I Race with the Devil. So a race with House of the Devil, where the house is being moved and people are trying to stop the house from being race with House of the Devil.
I wanted another Oculus film as well, because I thought that the Vassar Glass I thought was such a cool concept, and they go through all of this history of like, you know, and then it was with this family and this crazy shit happened. Like, I wanted to see what happened.
I'd almost watch an anthology style of that, three stories, right? With the mirror. And yeah, that'd be kind of fun.
I felt like there was something else there. Right now, I wanted a root of Livid. I'm still hoping for that eventually. Yeah. I don't know what happened to that in the Weinstein chaos, but right now I'm holding
took the wind out of its sails.
That's true. Yeah, it definitely kind They're of very
different.
A bit.
Yeah, you're right, but very different. That one's like a vampire-y thing.
It's a vampire-y, right? like eternal life thing. But right now I'm holding out for a Crawl sequel. Because if the alligators have infested this one house, there has to be crazy shit going on all over town. I'm holding out Crawl sequel. Yeah. And then I'm also hoping for a Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark that leans a little bit more on the original stories. Okay.
That did well, right?
They're doing a sequel.
Okay.
They're already in.
They announced it like a couple weeks back. They're going to do a sequel.
All right, Mr. Greenlight, get to greenlight.
Oh, something. I had another Blumhouse on here. Sweetheart, because if that thing has been on that island for a while, she found that other people had been on that island. So obviously that creature's been there for a while. There's more. Mm. Give me some aquatic horror here, Turek. Make it happen.
I'll write that down.
You tell Bea to get on that.
I don't know. I mean, like, there's a lot of, you know, like sifting through there, you know, a lot of the movies, you saw successes and then you saw one sequel and then they just petered out. Like Alex Aja's The Hills Have Eyes did very well and it was a great reboot. But then they did The Hills Have Eyes 2 and that was like a fucking, that was DOA. I wouldn't mind seeing like an Attack the Block sequel. Attack the Block is pretty stellar. It's a great, great film. I don't know. I don't know if it follows. Sure.
I mean, you'd just be curious, you know,
The Possession, was the Dybbuk box.
That was a tight little movie.
I felt there was more to explore and you could have fun with.
A character I'd like to see, it would be more in the Die Hard vein, would be You're Next, because her character is so good.
Yeah.
I could see it being just like Die Hard, where she ends up in another situation where it's like, oh, motherfucker. It's all, you know what I mean? Because she was just so good. And I think a lot of us thought that was going to spark a bigger, career burst for her at that point, because she was such a strong character. Yeah. All right. Well, let's go to the past. Last question here before we open up. Film from the past. Anything that was that you would like to, that was single, that you... Oh, okay. There's no question.
Cool.
We'll provoke them.
While we talk about this, you could send in questions right now if you're watching.
Yeah, feel free to send in questions.
Yeah,
because I don't know how you would do that, but
yeah, we don't know. Just think hard. We'll pick it up. We'll pick up your vibes with our scanner minds.
What is this complicated question about?
Okay, so any film from the past before 2010, obviously, that you would like to see
been
rebooted,
a franchise.
That could be a franchise even today, could be picked up again and put out there as a franchise. I'm going to lead this one because it's so obvious, and I've said it a million times on our show, which is Nightbreed. When I was a kid, I had never felt stronger feelings when a movie ended, where I was like, oh, I can't wait till next summer. I just totally believed it was coming. I just the way it ended was such a great, perfect way to set something up. And it took me quite a few years before I realized how poorly it had done financially. Like, I just didn't get that news in New Zealand. So that's a world I would have loved to have seen more films of. Personally, I just love the world. Yeah,
totally.
I've said it before, but it's like My Bloody Valentine just feels like it's a franchise.
It needed something. Yeah,
it's weird that there's only two of them, original and a reboot, and it's like, both of them should have had sequels. I'm surprised that that's not.
That's almost a side thing. Like, what slasher character could have been? I think the Torso Killer and Torso looks really good too. Cry Wolf, I guess, kind of knocked off. But I agree. My Bloody Valentine's a good killer.
I would have loved to see more Burnings. Like, I always thought that was such a tight little slasher. I felt like that could have gone somewhere cool. Yeah.
It's the irony is the Weinsteins. It's the one movie they made that they didn't remake or do sequels to.
Yeah.
Which they were notorious for. So
yeah, I always thought that The Lost Boys deserved a little bit better than it got on some of those.
How many
sequels
did they spawn?
Three. Two, there's three two of them. Two sequels.
Three. But yeah, three total. Yeah. So I always thought that it deserved something a little bit more expansive and world building. Yeah. I've always thought that there's an update to The Gate that could be really cool. I don't know why nobody's ever touched that one.
The second one's interesting. It's a little too crazy. You know, the first one's like perfect. Yeah, he's a guy who we got to get on the show because I just started to meet him quite a lot lately and super nice, Tibor.
Yeah,
Tibor. It would be great to get on on a...
Well, you know, very recently, Alex Winter was because he was supposed to remake The Gate in 3D.
Yeah.
Alex Winter, and I think he was on it for like 8 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah, a long time.
What it was about that movie that couldn't get it off the ground, but yeah, it should have been.
I think there's a contemporary version of Ghoulies that would be.
Becca, you know, there's a petition you can sign out there on change.org that's trying to get Sony's attention to do a Ghoulies remake.
I love change.org. Stop, you know, exploiting this animal and make a new Ghoulies, people.
Yeah, the same thing. Yeah. Well, me and Rob were talking about Ghoulies versus Critters at one point, weren't we, Rob?
I think so. I know.
I mean, we were drunk at some party talking about Ghoulies.
I wish there were more versus movies for sure.
Oh, yeah. I know. Elric and I have had conversations that there's an updated version of Society. No one will ever do it. I don't think.
I mean, Yasna obviously had the sequel idea, which, when you look at the news now, you've got like, oh my God, there's so many secret societies and power structures that you could explore. But it'd be interesting. I wonder if there's a way to explore that in a serious way versus the kind of campy style he went, or would it just be too grotesque? You know what I mean? Because I think it'd be hard to be that jokey about it right now. But yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say on that same note of like, you know, kind of the society seems to have doubled back on it. I watched I Drink Your Blood again a couple of nights ago.
Weird. I watched it like 2 weeks ago for the first time.
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
There's totally like it's Eisenhower versus hippies. It's very much like this like right wing, very buttoned up, you know, this is America versus these kind of hippies that come in. And I was like, there is something contemporary.
Turek's being creepy. Yeah. What's going on?
Turek's.
It's a gross movie.
It's just Becca being Becca.
What? Okay, fine then, Turek. Agree with me that Deep Rising needed a sequel.
Oh, absolutely. I found my contemporary.
You got virus close enough.
I found my contemporary sequel. I would love to see another Final Girls.
Oh yeah.
I want to see another sequel that could still have Taste of Farmiga, but another girl or somebody, but get thrown into another kind of slasher film. Like maybe a slasher, you know, like, I don't know, some other spin on the slasher formula. But I, you know, talking about sequels in the past, I would have loved to seen John Carpenter's The Thing Part 2.
Oh yeah. Me too. Yeah. I can't think of anything greater in the,
Wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't that be, I mean, like, I know that he's always said the Dark Horse comic was always a great follow-up, but.
The one we talked briefly about with Josh Miller and Steven Scarlatta, the best movies never made.
That's right. Yeah.
That two-part movie sequel sounded awesome.
Yeah.
I was gonna tease. I contributed a piece to the new Fangoria issue coming out, number 8, about Monster Squad and where they would be today.
Mm. Oh yeah,
that's one. I know Platinum Dunes almost remade it, and I'm thankful they didn't. But I kind of want to see those kids again now. Mm-hmm. Fighting monsters.
Not fighting monsters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
teaching their children. Yes. How to fight monsters.
Sure.
Having to get back together a bunch of kind of middle-aged kind of loser dudes getting together to have to do one last thing. That could be fun.
You know, I watched Scoob with my kids two nights ago, which I know Ryan and Elric both watched. Have you seen it yet, Rob?
No, not yet.
It's cute. It's cute. That's what I can say. It's not Scooby as we know it, but it's cute. Yeah. But it made me want an adult version of Scooby where they're actually going against some heavy shit, kind of like they did with the Banana Splits. Not quite as campy. It'll never happen.
Did you ever read Meddling Kids?
I love Meddling Kids so much.
Meddling Kids is basically, they're not naming the Scooby Gang, but it's a grounded take on the Scooby Gang. But they're much older. Like Fred is in a fucking mental institution and killed himself, you know. And they've gone through different iterations of Scooby, but they're up against a Lovecraftian aquatic horror. Mm-hmm.
Which
is really cool. Yeah,
yeah. I think they made an RPG about it recently. I think I saw that pop up.
Really?
Yeah, I may have to try. I'm 90% sure that I saw that pop up.
Oh, check it out.
But somebody just on Twitter says that your hair looks like Eraserhead Elric. So.
It is. Yeah, I haven't had a haircut. I'm not going to. In fact, that might be my Halloween costume coming up if I can last.
Hey.
I think to wrap up our franchise conversation with one word, let's just leave it with this word, Valentine. All right. Now let's move that mask. Come on. Sequels to The Mask alone. I would watch it. All right. So do we have any questions from listeners? Are they going to feel pressured now that they know we're looking out at them? No? Or is it going to just be lots of dead air?
They're just working on it.
Make something up if you don't.
Is that awesome host going to show up again from?
Yeah. I know. He was really cool.
Yeah, that was like that was like old school horror host stuff. I love that.
Now, are there any, because I can answer this question, are there any sequels that we talked about on the show that you now want to watch or revisit? Because honestly, I don't think I've seen Riddick, the third one, and I know I own it, so I'm probably going to watch it.
Yeah. Fun.
Yeah, you should watch it.
And there was something else that was mentioned that I'm like, oh, I kind of want to watch that too.
Yeah.
Well, yes, I want to watch Diary of the Dead, weirdly enough.
I kind of want to go backwards. I want to watch Diary and Survival and then go back to the original three.
I'm amazed Leprechaun didn't come out, personally, but...
It's bonkers.
Especially for bonkers, but...
Tremors? Yeah. Nobody brought the Tremors franchise?
No. You're a big fan, right?
Yeah. I like the first two, and then it just kind of goes up. Or third one's Old West?
Oh, guys, I think something's happening.
What is that?
What is
that?
The hell? Is Beelzebub joining us?
Am I hailing Satan?
Maybe he's going to ask us a question.
Baphomet, are you with us?
Yes.
Hey, how's it going? Are you asking questions? Or are you...
Yes. I'm the audience surrogate for tonight.
Okay.
I'm going to need a translation.
It looks like Zool.
I know. It looks like the Night of the Demon.
Yeah, it does.
You're the key master.
Well, I mean, that's like your opinion. So I do have an audience question.
All right.
Is Halloween Kills still slated for release this year?
Oh, Jesus.
Even if it's VOD.
You knew it was coming.
Same with the next Purge film. We need to know. Inquiring minds want to know.
We are acting like it is still coming out in October. And a trailer will come out. I've seen it. I've seen the posters. I've seen the trailer. We have not heard anything more than that. We're going to be releasing a trailer and a poster sometime soon.
Screen share, Ryan. Screen share.
Yeah. But we're still acting as if it's coming out in October. We have not heard
anything else. It's very clear that you don't really want to answer this question, and that's fine. This next one's for Rebecca. Rebecca, I was wondering if there was a chance you'll be doing a biography or possibly a doc for Zoe Lund.
Oh, God, I would totally, I have no idea who asked that question, but I know this just made my day. A bio for Zoe Lund. I mean,
Abel Ferrer's actress, co-writer on the Sporting Club.
I still am obsessed with her, like total like girl crush on Zoe Lund, so much so that I went to find her original apartment when I lived in New York City. She used to breed rats, and she has a very specific type of rats. Like, she created a type of rats that is, she's just a fascinating character. God, I hadn't even thought about that, but I need to, right? Okay,
yes,
thank you. Idea.
It's your job. These are the things that you have to be thinking about. Now, next question, that answer was acceptable. Okay. Always thought the Maniac Cop franchise was underrated, especially the first two films.
Good call.
Do you think the remake will ever get made?
I think it is, based on our conversation with Bill Lustig two episodes ago. Yeah, he said that
HBO series.
HBO series with Nicholas Winding Refn.
But he's not directing, though, right? He's Refn's producing.
Yeah,
maybe producing. I think it was kind of his vision, but yeah. I would have been a little more excited for him.
Some people think he's a better producer than a director. Some people think he's a better producer than director.
Okay. Yes, Beelzebub.
That's like your opinion, man.
I really hope they put the rat from number two in there somewhere.
Silence! Yeah, sorry. We're asking audience questions. Silence.
I love this.
That's a lot of silence.
Is he fucking with us?
Is there anything else?
Oh.
Check.
Oh, hey, there you go.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, hey.
Had a little bit of a technical hiccup.
We mistook it for intensity.
There's a wrinkle in hell.
I know. Yeah. That was like slow zoom in on Beelzebub.
I mean, honestly, do you guys want to see that again? We'll hit you with another zoom in here. Hold up 1 second.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be okay. Great.
Zoom out. No. We're live. This is live TV.
That was a punch in.
We want another zoom in. They asked for it. Okay. Remember, you guys asked for this. Okay. Next audience question is. Nice. Okay. Next audience question is: what franchise has benefited the most from having a variety of directors?
Question.
I think from the big ones, Friday 13th, but
That's a good question.
I would actually say Nightmare on Elm Street, because each Nightmare on Elm Street has its own level of scope, its own vision. I mean, like, you could definitely say that Rennie Harlan's is much different than Chuck Russell's, you know.
And
Friday the 13th, I mean, I kind of feel they bleed together a little bit.
Yeah, and I actually agree with Ryan on that, because like, even Freddy's Dead, even though that tends to be a very polarizing one, if you think about the director's body of work and how she was coming from sitcoms and things like that, it suddenly makes sense why it is
Rachel
done. Once you see the rest of the work that she's done, it's her. So it makes more sense. So yeah, I agree that, like, I think that that's one of the things that makes Nightmare kind of most exciting. But then again, I do love some variety of Jason when we go Jason X. Thank you, Todd Farmer.
You know what? I actually agree with this one. I think you guys know.
Is that Beelzebub?
Yes.
That's also a backhanded comment the rest of the show. And,
Sorry, Beelzebub.
No, Ryan, you're up.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'd be remiss if I did not mention the Blade trilogy.
Mm. Oh wow!
Nice.
I agree with the one and two, but not three.
I will back three, guy. Back three,
and I'll back you on that.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we have another question. Rob, did you like the Bates Motel starring Bud Cort? Did you like the Bates Motel starring Bud Cort?
So,
I love Bud Cort.
When I originally found it, because it was aired on TV in like the late 80s, I think. So when I originally found it, I had to find like a bootleg of it, and I didn't like it at all at that time, because I didn't understand what it was. Was it a sequel? Yes. Was it a TV pilot? Yada, yada. However, I will credit Chelsea Stardust, the director of Satanic Panic, made me rewatch it a couple of years ago, and because of her enthusiasm and her laughing a lot, it actually was very entertaining. It's not a good Psycho spinoff, but it is an entertaining TV pilot with Jason Bateman. So you can pretend it's an Arrested Development prequel.
I won't, but I appreciate the suggestion. Thank you. Next question. Oh, I'm sorry, Rebecca.
I just realized two big horror franchises that we have neglected to mention in any capacity. Texas Chainsaw Massacre has not come up at all, really.
Well, I dug deep. I looked inside and I realized that I can't.
The end of three.
Oh, yeah. That, in terms of runs, that was actually my runner-up for best runs, because I think one, two, and three are utterly wild, and they're so different, and they're just radically different genres, and I like all three of them, you know, not equally, but I like them all.
Yeah.
But good point. Yeah, I'm glad you actually mentioned it, because...
Yeah, and also Hannibal, I mean, Silence of the Lambs, Red Dragon, I mean, Manhunter, there are some choice titles in there that the Hannibal TV show, you know. Some of them are hit or miss.
Can't do it all. You just can't.
Can't do it all. You can't do it all.
I do it all. Can you acknowledge that?
Yeah, you do. You do it all. You perform.
Guys, we may need a fifth co-host.
Thank you. Honestly, that's what everyone's been saying. Okay, next question. Actually, this isn't so much of a question, Freddie Ruiz. It's more of a thing that, that he just wants to say. He says, Land of the Dead is so good, but Day of the Dead is perfection. Thoughts?
Interesting. I'd say Dawn of the Dead is perfection, and Day of the Dead is close to perfection.
I think Freddie Ruiz has a bone to pick with you.
Because if you look at the structure of Day of the Dead, it's the exact same structure as Dawn of the Dead, but different themes are being performed. But at the end of the day, what happens is mankind's undoing is because of some fucking asshole who's going to let the zombies in. So if Day of the Dead had skewered that kind of formula, I would say it was perfection. But it's riding on the heels of Dawn of the Dead, which had set a precedent of a structure that us zombie fans fell in love with.
I will say Day is my favorite. I do think it's perfection. I like it more than Dawn.
John, I'm live on that camera. Can you bring it back? Can you bring that camera back down? Thank you. Yeah,
Beelzebub is such a diva.
I mean, I took the time to get the lighting right. We had hair and makeup in here, and now the cameraman wants to drift all around willy-nilly. It's like kind of disrespectful a little bit, but it's okay. We're going to forgive him. Okay. Next question. What single installment film do you think would have the most potential as a hypothetical franchise?
Season of the Witch.
Okay. All right, next question. I feel like the Hatchet franchise has the slickest continuity of any franchise. Do you guys think the Victor Crowley jumped the shark by going meta, or was it a nice addition?
Is the last one just called Victor Crowley?
Yeah,
but it's not meta, it's a sequel.
I haven't seen it.
I think some of the marketing was like meta, but then when you watch the movie, you were like, oh, it's actually just like another one in the franchise.
I definitely think there's still some life left in that franchise. I mean, what is it? Wrong Turn went kind of meta with the second one. And, you know, they still kept going for God knows how many.
Just want to shout out Joe Lynch real quick.
Joe Lynch, that is a hell of a sequel. Starring one of our friends, Matt Curry Holmes. Yeah. So, yeah.
And lest we forget Henry Rollins.
That
was a tight sequel.
It was a big one. Okay, next question. How important is cast continuity to you guys? For example, I think Manhunter / Silence of the Lambs / Hannibal is a better Lecter trilogy than the All Hopkins trilogy of Red Dragon, Silence, Hannibal. P.S. I miss you guys. This is from Charlie D. Larizikis.
Oh, Charlie. Well, of course you would, Charlie. You have impeccable taste. I would argue that Brian Fuller's Hannibal blows them all away. But Michael Mann gave us a chilling, cold-hearted Lecter that it would have been interesting to see Brian Cox carry that through. But I think what people respond to is Anthony Hopkins' charm and wit and charisma. Which I don't think that Brian Cox had.
Yeah, it's different quality.
It's a really hard decision because franchise is so really
okay. Acknowledge Beelzebub.
I love you, Beelzebub.
Really, really appreciate that. And it's not like a self-esteem thing. It's just like it's what you have to do.
I think that franchises ride a really difficult line in that, because there are certain franchises where it's like, oh no, that's the guy who plays Pinhead, and as soon as you violate from that, people get upset. Or, you know, Robert Englund is Freddy, and as soon as you violate from that, people get dicey. But at the same time, you know, I look forward to seeing who's going to be Batman in the new one, or who's going to be James Bond. Like, there is a certain fun in kind of watching them redo.
Yeah, like, when is there going to be a Beelzebub Batman? Or like a Beelzebub, like James Bond.
I knew you were going to fucking do that, Turek. I know. That's what happens when we try to recreate Pinhead. It gets real sketch. It gets real sketch. So, yeah.
Yeah, we want the real thing. Give us Doug Bradley or nothing.
Exactly. And so it's always a hard one in franchises to try to figure out, like, you know, is the character connected to the character actor, or can you kind of, you know, reinvent every couple of years?
Sure. I do not like,
I mean, I reinvent myself every few eons, but yeah, every couple of years, that's cute.
Well, Phantasm 2 would have been a better movie, not recast.
Yeah.
So. Agreed.
And I mean, like, Ash, no one could ever picture Ash as anyone but Bruce Campbell. Like,
one of the best decisions the remake did. Really great.
Yeah.
Okay, we got we got time for a couple more questions. Can you guys share some of your handshake horror films? Also, thank you guys for the great spooky talk.
Handshake horror films.
That's an Elric term.
Yeah, you're taking my other show.
So wait, Elric,
explain.
Yeah, what's a handshake horror?
So the first episode of Pure Cinema, handshake movies, where it's the idea of, like, when you meet somebody, what are those, like, five movies that really define you? Like, that it's just you. That's not your favorites, even. It's beyond your favorites. It's almost like the movies you think about all the time. You tell people, you show people. It can mean, you know, it's like when you're shaking their hand. They're the five films you're transferring.
Yeah, I always refer to them as
films. It's the films that you would bring to hell with you if you could only have
The Beelzebub handshake.
In a totally Beelzebub way. I always think of them as the films I find myself proselytizing the most. Like, when somebody is like, I'm looking for something I've never seen, the ones that I'm like, oh, why have you not watched?
I mean, I think we all know some of them. Like, I could even look around the room and go, oh, I think of Fright Night when I think of Ryan. I think of Possession when I think about the movies I've been talking about the most in my life. Beckett, many aquatic horrors spring to mind.
I would say Slugs. I've said Slugs, I'm going down as the person who's made everyone watch Slugs. Lake Mungo, I proselytize a lot. Yeah. Lake Mungo is one that I always kind of say, like, if you have not seen that, that's like a super tight, deep cut.
Return of Living Dead. Jump scare. I would call these my security blanket movies. Uh-huh. You know, it's like Return of the Living Dead, Fright Night, Reanimator, Dawn of the Dead. Movies that I don't mind revisiting over and over again.
Cube is one for me, like any of those kind of like puzzle thinky, I need to figure out what's going on type horror movies. I always, you know, find myself kind of gravitating towards repeatedly.
Yeah. If there's only one Carpenter film, I'm curious if you could only pick one as on your handshake five, which Carpenter do you pull?
Great question.
Thanks, Bees.
It's not you even.
I'd say They Live, to be honest. I actually remember, I worked at Amoeba in Hollywood, and one of my friends there that I was working with didn't know Carpenter's filmography. He was big into the Criterion movies and, like, you know, kind of the, dare I say, pretentious stuff. And we joked all the time. I was like, there's really solid horror stuff. And I remember him coming over and me showing him They Live. And him being incredibly impressed with it.
Yeah.
And everything that
that's a great movie. So,
Big Trouble. That
that's a good choice.
I mean, not even technically a horror film, but I mean, I would also say the escape films would be like desert island movies for me. But yeah, not technically as horror.
I mean, like for you, I mean, like it would be They Live. I mean, for me, I'm trying to think. It's like, you know, Sophie's Choice is being made when it comes to Carpenter's movies, isn't it? It's like Christine. The Fog. They're probably The Fog.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's like telling somebody a good ghost story. Yeah.
Yeah. The Fog and Christine go head to head in terms of movies that I just reach for. And I'm like, I got nothing going on for the next hour and a half. Let me just toss something on. That way I can either mentally check out when I need to or just zone in when I really want to. But either way, I always wind up getting caught up in them.
Has anyone ever, like, I've never heard anything of Christine being considered for a reboot. Like, I don't think anyone's ever
they played around with it. Sony, way back in the day, I think it was like early 2000s, Chris Landon was going to do one for Sci-Fi. Chris Landon is the guy who worked with us on who directed Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You for us.
And a bunch of paranormal.
Happy Death Day to You as well.
He did. But it was right after Disturbing Behavior, not Disturbing Behavior, Disturbia. He was going to do Christine.
Oh, wow.
I would say, regarding The Fog, in the same way that we were talking about franchise, if there was one that defined, like, kind of gave a flavor for that, I feel like if you picked one movie of Carpenter's filmography, The Fog feels like a good summary of what you get from a Carpenter movie.
Yeah, it'd be that or The Thing.
Yeah,
I don't know. I really have to give some love to Mouth of Madness too, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, he's just the best. I mean, there's a run there. If we're doing a show on director runs, I think he has a run.
Like, no, yeah. Solid.
It's just the best. It would be the thing for me, but I'm with you. Big Trouble Little China. It's the only movie I watched two birthdays in a row when I was a little kid. It was like that good. It lasted 2 years for me. So
yeah, that's like my comfort food. Like, it's not a horror. I'll watch that before bedtime any night. I love that one so much.
So fun, yeah.
Did I ever tell you guys about my favorite, the best experience I had watching John Carpenter's Vampires? So they showed it last October at the Autry, which is a Western museum here in Los Angeles. And I had Alyssa in town and she'd never seen it. So we're going to go see John Carpenter's Western Vampires. But what was hilarious about it was, first of all, the movie is so much better on the big screen because it's actually shot with that kind of scope and all. But they only had one projector. And so every 25 minutes, they had to stop to change the reel. And so watching that movie with 20-minute breaks and being able to talk to your neighbors about it made it the most enjoyable. It was like the best time I ever had watching Vampire. It's like it stopped. That was a pretty cool one.
You turn to Scott every time. Right? Got wood.
Talking about it. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, here we go, next reel. So, I recommend John Carpenter's Vampires with 20-minute breaks.
And final question. Thank you. All of those answers were acceptable. Okay, last question is from Jonathan Becker. If you could see one new horror villain versus film, what would it be?
Well, I mean, I've answered this as Predator Purge, but that's less a versus than a setting. So let me rethink that.
You know what? I have one that I thought would be interesting. A while back, I interviewed Tony Todd for the Candyman 2 Blu-ray. And there was so much good stuff we talked about that didn't end up in the final thing. And for a while, there was a rumor that there was going to be like a Leprechaun versus Candyman, which sounds stupid. So I asked him about it. And he legitimately gave a good answer. He's like, you know what? That's stupid to me. However, he's like, I would be game if they combine Clive Barker's worlds. So he's like, if you want to cross Candyman with Pinhead, dude. And Hellraiser, I would have been down for that. So I think that's super cool. Candyman and Pinhead.
I've got mine. I've always wanted to see Wishmaster versus Warlock.
Totally.
Nice. W.
So you got two assholes that can just conjure shit out of thin air. I mean, like, one is hindered by the fact that, you know, someone needs to make a wish. So Wishmaster would have to go around in his battle with the Warlock and be like, make a wish.
Wishmaster's a punk.
Wishmaster's a punk, but he's fucking awesome, though.
Hell yeah. My dude. That's what I'm saying.
I think I want, like, the same actor played two different characters, like Nick Cage Mandy versus Nick Cage Color Out of Space going at it. And figure it out how it happens.
How about leaving Las Vegas Nick Cage versus Color Out of Space Nick Cage?
It's just drunk and belligerent going against. Guy crying in a bathroom. No, and also I love animal versus movies, but anytime they do them, they get relegated to like sci-fi. So it's like Anaconda versus Lake Placid. It's immediately sci-fi grade. There is something I would love about like a Deep Blue Sea versus Deep Rising, but do it like as just throwing money at the screen. I would eat popcorn and giggle the whole time. So $100 million, greenlight that shit, Hollywood.
All right, we're gonna do it. We're going to make that happen. Unfortunately, that is all the time that we have for you guys. But I really thank you for joining us here in hell. And I honestly, I hope that you can come visit us sometimes. You know, when this coronavirus shit is over, we'll be able to maybe hang out.
We got
to
be back. Yes,
we love it. Clean up this planet, man. Clean up this planet, Beelzebub. Satan. You got the power.
What did you do, man?
I got the power. I changed y'all's voices. How about that?
I love it.
Hell yeah, sounding evil now. Anyway, wave goodbye, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Coming to Blu-ray and DVD is Creepshow Season 1. This week's episode is sponsored by RLJE Films. Based on George A. Romero's 1982 horror comedy classic, Season 1 of Shudder's original series Creepshow is coming out on Blu-ray and DVD and is loaded with over 3 hours of bonus content. Pre-order your copy now at Walmart.com. Also, RLJE Films is releasing the Shudder-exclusive One Cut of the Dead on Blu-ray Steelbook and DVD. 100% certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. IndieWire calls it the best zombie comedy since Shaun of the Dead. Join in on the madness and pre-order One Cut of the Dead at BestBuy.com today.
Fangoria is honored to publish the legendary master of horror, Mick Garris' latest book, These Evil Things We Do, the Mick Garris Collection. Whether a story about a plastic surgeon with a uniquely disturbing approach to his job, to tales of deranged child genius obsessed with his teacher, These Evil Things We Do, the Mick Garris Collection explores mankind's capacity for limitless evil, and how often that evil hides in plain sight. This collection brings together four of Garris's works for the first time in a single volume, along with a brand new novella called Free. Now available for pre-order on Kindle and paperback through Amazon. This week is also your last chance to subscribe to Fangoria in time to receive our summer issue. In case you didn't see online, the cover featuring Patton Oswalt on his dream horror showdown has taken the internet by storm. For very limited time, use the promo code WHOWOULDWIN to get 25% off your first year of Fango at Fangoria.com.
Final Girl Wines is a boutique mom-and-pop wine label any horror lover can be proud to share. Whether it's a big, bold red like their Barbara Petite Verdot, or the crisp summer flavors of their Wichita Rose, there's a Final Girl for your palate and occasion. Their wines have scored over 90 points and above in Wine Enthusiast magazine, and have prices that won't break the bank. Use the code SHOCKWAVES10 to get 10% off your first four-bottle purchase, or sign up for their no-commitment four-bottle wine club to get 10% off all future purchases. Go to FinalGirlWines.com to place an order. That's FinalGirlWines.com.
Fright Rags is bringing you the best in horror apparel and accessories since 2003, offering a wide range of products for your favorite creature features, slasher flicks, and cult classics. They're coming to get you, Barbara. This week, Fright Rags has released a brand new collection for the George Romero classic, Night of the Living Dead, featuring all new shirts, hats, and wax pack trading cards, all officially licensed and available at FrightRags.com. Get them while they last. Shockwaves listeners get 10% off when you use the code SHOCKWAVES2020. Remember, that's Fright-Rags.com.
Fangoria and Blumhouse present Shockwaves. Shockwaves is a member of the Fangoria Podcast Network, hosted and produced by Rob Galuzzo, Elric Kane, Ryan Terrick, and Rebecca McKendry. Sound recording, mixing, and editing by Ernie Hurtado. Music by Gregory S. Burkhart. Logo art and design by Aaron Crawford. For Fangoria, Dallas Sanye, Phil Nobile Jr., Jessica Safa-Vamare, Brandon Wynardi, Natasha Pacetta, and Rob Galuzzo.